Hey, so have you heard the rumor that the restaurant guys are introducing a call-in component to the show? Well, guess what? It's true. So if you have a question for the restaurant guys or something you'd like us to discuss on the air, call us at 732-828-9459. Call anytime from anywhere. We'll answer your questions and who knows, maybe even have you on one of our upcoming Restaurant Guys call-in shows. The number to call is 732-828-9459. 732-828-9459 from anytime or anywhere.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through WCTCAM or restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Hey, Mark, how are you this morning?
Hey, Francis, I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm well, and I'm excited about today's show. Mark and I, a couple of years ago, we did a show with a woman who wrote a book called Piano, 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 and it is from her farm, La Petraia, the place of stone, which is located in Chianti, and we were impressed by the book.
It was one of those places that really had one of those interviews, and Francis and I will occasionally do an interview where from some place we've never been, or about some place we've never been, that really intrigues us, that really speaks to us and says, you know what, that's a place I need to make a trip to. That's a place I need to get to really understand what's happening there.
And so this year when we were at in Italy, we decided to ride through Bologna and over to Rada in Chianti, where we visited with Susan at La Petraia. And we recorded a show from there. And I have to say, while the book was tremendous, the recipes were tremendous, the place itself was...
They pale in comparison to what may be the most beautiful place on earth.
And so why don't we go and listen to the show that we recorded at Rada in Chianti at La Petraia.
And La Petraia is... This place is really special.
Hi, this is Francis and Mark, and we're recording live from the hillside of La Petraia in the Chianti region of Italy. We're here with Susan Grant and Dr. Marco Panichi, who Susan owns this wonderful establishment. If you listen to our archives, you can find a show we did with Susan about her wonderful book, Piano, Piano, Piano. We've come all the way to Italy to check out what we read in the book. We wanted to see what was here. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Mark and Francis. Welcome to La Petraia.
And we're also here with Dr. Marco Panichi, who runs the physical plant of the operation. Dr. Panichi is going to speak in Italian, and Susan's going to translate for us. Welcome.
Buongiorno. Salve.
From the top of the hill where the house is located at maybe one of the most beautiful vistas I've really ever come across in my travels, and I've been on the top of a lot of mountains in my life. What am I looking at, Susan?
Well, right in front of us you see Rada over there, which is our nearest town on the hill. And over further away on the horizon, 32 kilometers away, is Siena. We're in the province of Siena here. And between us and Siena, all you really see is that little town of Rada. That's what always blows me away about this area, is how things have really not changed for centuries and how the people here have had the wisdom to protect this landscape.
Well, and the people in that town have lived there for how long?
Oh, since Etruscan times.
What all do you grow on the farm?
Well, we're almost entirely self-sufficient. We've got 7 hectares of grapes. We've got about 150 olive trees and about 150 heirloom fruit trees. We go all year with different vegetable gardens, so we're self-sufficient there. We've got pigs and chickens and ducks and geese and quail and rabbits, and we just found out today, I just found out today we're getting sheep next week. We have lots of game, wild boar and deer that live in the woods. We've got a chestnut forest. We grow lavender.
Two things I wanted to touch on. One, as you said, you had heirloom trees. Some of those trees were technically considered extinct before you started working with them.
Yeah, it was a project that we worked on with the agronomer from the province of Siena. She brought back a lot of trees that had gone extinct by going around to old villas and deserted farms and transplanting saplings. And she had trouble finding anyone who would give her any land to plant these trees on to help to bring them back, because the land around here is so expensive for vineyards. And so we're sort of an experimental farm.
If land this valuable were in the United States, there somebody would come along and plow that forest under and be planting grapes or whatever the most valuable crop would be. Why isn't that happening here?
It's not allowed. And it hasn't, not only is it not allowed today, it has never been allowed. We've got old maps of the property from a couple of hundred years ago, and you can look at those maps and see that it's still exactly the same today as it was then. There's the same amount of field, and there's the same amount of forest. The house is the same size. It's just the way it is. They just won't let you cut a tree down even.
We talked at dinner last night, an amazing, amazing dinner that you made for us, about the interaction of the forest and the farm. And I thought that was really fascinating. I hadn't heard that before. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. One of the things that we do here is we run these landscape reading foraging classes, and we take people over into the forest in order to illustrate really the fact that the farms here in this part of the world, but really I think even in North America it used to be like this. Everybody had a woodlot on their property. The wilderness was an important part of the agriculture, because the people living here had to have wood, had to have game, and they relied on the forest to provide them a lot of their food and to heat their houses, to build for construction. And so they looked after the forest, and they looked after what grew in the forest and who lived in the forest. And that's something that we're still trying to do here today on the property.
How much stuff is foraged from around here? I mean, as we've been walking by, you've been picking up stuff off the ground and eating them. You know, if I were to try that, I would probably pick up the poison ivy by mistake and eat that and die.
Oh, it's incredible for foraging around here. There's all these different, as we've been having the wild herbs, there's wild fruit, wild apples, there's mushrooms, there's brassicas, wild legumes.
And do you forage for a lot of this stuff and use it for dinner in the agriturismo?
We do, yeah, we do. And we usually go out, or when somebody from the kitchen goes out every day, and whatever is in season we bring back. And we also run foraging classes here for our guests. Growing here, this is wild. It's called Alaria, and we use this a lot in our, we do a salad here called Serra and Salva, which is a wild and cultivated salad. But this tastes like garlic, this leaf. And it grows all year.
Oh, this is crazy good.
We're picking it through the chicken wire here on the fence along the vineyard.
And basically I'm eating leaves that are giving me garlic flavor in my mouth, and it's as if you put a garlic salad together, but on one little leaf.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy delicious. Now, this is the orchard area here. It's all terraced. Are orchards always terraced when they're this high up?
When we first bought this property, we didn't even know these terraces were here. It was so densely covered with brush. And gradually we started clearing it, and we discovered we had all these beautiful old stone terraces. And nowadays in Chianti, when they're planting vineyards, they just bulldoze these terraces. And so you're losing that aspect of Chianti, of having these old terraces. And the reason for that is they're all dry stone walls, and they're really expensive to maintain and to build. And so it's just easier to bulldoze, and you get more land for planting grapes that way too. But it causes erosion in the soil, and you lose all the valuable topsoil as well. And so because we didn't want to move the topsoil, because we didn't want to disturb it, we didn't have to bring in big bulldozers. We just stuck the vines in the ground. We saved a lot of money that way planting the vineyard. And so our consulting agronomer said, I'll make a deal with you. If you just let me stick the vines in the ground and do it like that, I'll save you enough money to restore the dry stone wall terraces. So that's what we did.
That's amazing, and it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. The dry stone walls all around the property are absolutely beautiful, I guess, you know, because when you're this high up on a mountain, to level things out, to be able to walk on them and build a house on them and build a walkway on them is, you know, with the terraces, it's possible.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you can tell when you look at an old dry stone wall. Lichen is the slowest growing plant in the world, I believe. And you can tell the age of some of these old stone walls because of where there's lichen on the rocks. That's a really old terraced wall that's been here for a really long time.
Dr. Panicki, you're from around this area?
Sì, io vengo da un piccolo paese 10 chilometri da qua.
Yes, I come from a little town about 10 kilometers from here.
And so what did you think when two crazy Canadians came to purchase this unworkable property and brought you along? What?
No, ho pensato che il progetto era unico quando mi hanno spiegato la loro idea.
So he thought it was unique per this region, but maybe also for Italy to have
Italia,
a farm that was
in questo tempo un'azienda
multipurpose,
polivalente.
After 9 or 10 years now, are you happy with the success you've achieved here?
Sì, io sono arrivato 3 anni fa, non all'inizio, però il progetto è ancora valido e l'azienda è ancora dinamica, è ancora in crescita.
We're still growing. We've still got a lot to do, but yeah, he's very happy so far.
What remains to be done? What are the biggest projects that remain to be done?
Abbiamo da fare ancora tante cose, però una delle cose principali è quella di realizzare un grande vino.
And to build a cantina where we can make the wine. So this project that we have for the wine is really a new thing for Petraia because, as we explained earlier, the property 200-300 years ago looked exactly the same as it does today in terms of how much of it was fields and how much of it was forest and how much of it, how big the house was. But there were never vines here, ever. So this is a big challenge for us.
And this is the highest vineyard in the Chianti Appellation, right?
In the Chianti Classico, yeah.
Why? Well, let's walk on. All right, let's cut away from the interview for just a second. We're back here at WCTC. One of the things that struck me is, first of all, I don't think we clearly communicated enough because we were still in the thick of it, how beautiful this place was. And secondly, what remains to be done? On your 600-year-old farm?
It's, well, 1,400-year-old farm.
Right.
One of the things that Susan communicates, and I'm not sure that she communicates it to the degree that she really feels it, but as soon as you meet her and you talk to her, you know that she has a thoughtfulness of this property, not for her lifetime, but for the lifetime of the property.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right? Both
backward
back
and forward.
Forward. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So that there's an understanding that this is a living, breathing property and organism that comes together, an environment that comes together that needs one part for the other part to function, and that she's just a link.
And you know, but how important is Susan McKenna Grant for bringing this farm back from disuse after so long, and she desperately wants to be the link that sends it forward. And this place, okay, it can't be economically the best use of her money, mm-hmm. okay? But she's creating something that will outlive us all, and hopefully, I'm sure that it is her hope, will continue to partake and provide for generations to come. It's amazing.
Let's go back to our interview from the vineyard.
Right, here we go. So we're now in the white wine vineyard off the back of the property. Now, there's not a lot of white wine grown in Chianti.
In questo vigneto abbiamo un 70% di viognere e il restante 30%
So 70% of the vineyard is Viognier and the other 30% is Croce, Manzone e Traminer Aromatica.
And those are uncommon grapes. Like Viognier especially is normally grown in the northern Rhone Valley of France, and here it is on a mountaintop in Chianti. Are you crazy?
No, no, we hope, si spera di avere un prodotto eccellente.
We're not crazy. We're at 600 meters here, and at that altitude, it should bring out the perfumes of these wines that are more commonly found in the of these grapes that are more commonly found north.
And when do you hope to produce a white wine first for that could be commercially available?
Ottimisti, prossimo anno dovremo
già he thinks within two or three years we should have an optimum wine, a white wine. We've already, for the last 2 years, bottled the white wine just for ourselves, and we're already really happy with what we've gotten. So he thinks by next year or two or three more years we should be there with it. He says we won't go all the way down here because there's a mud down here that's out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll just go far enough to see the pigs. At this altitude, this is the place where the olive tree stops growing and the chestnut tree starts. So we're at that very sort of challenging place to grow olive trees. And Marco studied, his specialty is olives, so he's got some interesting stuff happening up there in the Olivetto. And we've got a couple of Cinta Senese pigs down there, too.
Let's go catch the pigs.
We must visit the pigs.
So with the pigs that I see here by the farmhouse, as they look over Chianti, there's a fence, but I can't determine whether they're fenced in or we're fenced in. Can you explain that? Because it's such a big area.
Sì, questi maiali sono Cinta Senese, sono una vecchia varietà toscana.
So these Cinta Senese pigs can't be raised in a stall or a small area. They have to be raised in the woods. So we've got two large sectors of woods fenced in here, and we rotate them from year to year, from one to the other, because they completely destroy the fenced in area. And the reason that they're fenced in, of course, is because they'll eat everything if they're not. And also, they have to be fenced in also to keep the wild boar away from them.
Because the wild boar will mate with them.
Yeah.
And do they eat the roots of the trees, or do you feed them, or do they just scavenge what's there?
No, più per scavare, non tanto per mangiare, ma.
So is that one of the reasons wild boar can be so devastating to the farm?
Because, yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the first vintage of our 3 years ago when we had one of our vineyards was producing grapes, our first vintage, there was a hole in the fence, and one night boar got in and ate the whole vintage.
In one night?
In one night, yeah.
Wow, it's crazy.
I feel so much better about eating wild boar now.
They have so many great natural defenses. Unfortunately, their great weakness is their deliciousness. That's the problem. You serve wild boar on the property, and did you think you indeed got some of those boar that ate your grapes and then ate the boar?
I sure hope so.
So talk to us. We've just come up from what I thought was the top of the hill, wasn't the top of the hill. There seems to always be more top of the hill in Chianti as we climb higher and higher. And now I'm on an extreme angle, on an extreme slant, more extreme than any vineyard I've ever seen. And these are olive trees up here, right?
Sì, questo è il nostro piccolo oliveto
Like we were saying earlier, we're above, actually above the limit where the olive tree should grow. So Marco selected varieties that are Tuscan and also some that are from outside of Tuscany that are resistant, very resistant to cold and to the altitude. We had a really cold and bad winter this year, and the trees have suffered. But they've suffered everywhere in Tuscany this winter. It was a really long, cold winter this year.
We talk about mountain fruit with wine all the time. What does the cold do for olive oil that comes from these olive trees? How is it different?
Sì, sicuramente. Ecco, questo è il nostro vantaggio e anche il nostro scopo di avere.
What the altitude does is it gives you less oil, but more profumato, and oil that has more polyphenols in it, which are helps the oil to last longer and it's better for your health.
Mountain-grown olive oil. Do you remember that when we went up to the high? It's too, yeah. Grapes can't grow beyond there.
We just kept climbing and climbing and climbing. Well, olives aren't really supposed to grow beyond there. So it was really fascinating how they've adapted the farm to be just that, a farm that lives off what the land gives you rather than says, you know what? This is what I want to grow. This is what you know, corn. I want corn, so we're going to grow corn here.
So clear cut the field and we'll plant what we want. And that's not, well, and you know, it's funny. One of the things that I realize now in talking to and listening again to these interviews that we did in Italy, you know, with Susan McKenna Grant, she went over and took over this farm that was in disrepair with a road. They had to rebuild the last half mile of road. And that road is an exaggeration, right? The last half mile of road up the mountain. And, you know, they said to Susan McKenna Grant, yeah, you can't do that. You're a Canadian. You don't even speak Italian at that point. You can't bring this farm back. Well, she did. And then you can't grow grapes this high. And she did. And you really can't even grow olives this high. And she did. Oh, and these trees are extinct, except here they are. Well, so we need to take a short break to hear from the sponsor. But when we come back on the other side, there's a lot more talking about the restaurant and the accommodations and how they've done this. Just amazing, amazing thing, unlike anything I've ever seen at this Agriturismo in Rodin Chianti. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, an off-site show or an on-site show that we're listening to today about Mark and my visit to La Petraia in Rada in Chianti in Italy. If you want to find out more about La Petraia, of course, you can go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And it was just a fascinating, fascinating place to visit.
We probably should define the word agriturismo for some of our listeners who don't know exactly what it is. And agriturismo is very much like we would have a bed and breakfast here, except it's on a farm. And in Italy, there are a lot of these agriturismo, although they are varying degrees. Some are more farm-like, some are more bed and breakfast-like, some really don't have anything to do with the farm whatsoever.
It just happens to be on there. And the thing is, when you form an agriturismo or you put an agriturismo on your vineyard or farm, you get a tax break. And so there's a reason to just basically put a bed and breakfast and plop it on your vineyard, and, you know, it's nothing special. But this is truly, you visit a working farm of the most magnificent historical, and it's a working farm. They produce what you eat on the farm. It's almost entirely self-sufficient. How crazy is that?
It's too crazy.
And I'm sure, just from looking at those vineyard sites, I guess I can't be sure. I'm not that much of a wine expert. They're going to produce some great wines. They are going to produce some great wines one day.
We spent some time in the next segment talking to Susan about the water, and I really want you to hear this.
Yeah, water, agriturismo, take a listen to even more from La Patria and Rada in Chianti.
Susan, one of the first things you notice when you get here, there's a lovely little decanter of water in your room, and I walked over to her and said, oh, lovely, she's got bottled water for us up here. That's really delightful. And so I reached, I grabbed some water, and I was like, This water is remarkable. It's delicious. I wonder which bottling company she's using to bring this water in. Can you tell us a little bit about the water on the property?
The water is that we use. It's from the property. We don't buy any water because we have the source of the Pesa River on the property. We've got an abundance of spring water, and so we do have beautiful water. And we're the high, there's nobody above us, so we don't have to worry about pesticides or animals or anything like that. It's pure, it's good water.
Well, Susan, as a young boy, we've talked about the fact that my father had a farm, but his farm, sadly, was in a town called White Sulphur Springs.
Yeah, White Sulphur, by the way, smells like rotten eggs. So, Mark grew up on, maybe that's why you're so mean. Okay, this is a tiny, tiny little stream that's running down rather rapidly along the side of the vineyard. It's like, I thought it was just a ditch. I didn't even see it as a stream. Now, this is from a spring on the property. We're basically at the top of a mountain. It's got to come from right around here, right?
The highest, yeah. So, yeah, there's a very famous river in Tuscany called the Pesa River, and it begins its life here at La Patria. And so we have a lot of springs, natural springs on the property, and fortunately we have a lot of water because it gets really hot and dry here in the summertime, and a lot of people run out of water. Oh, we're walking by right here too, our Frutti di Bosco, our berry plants. Here we've got black currants, white currants, red currants, raspberries, gooseberries. So we have three or four rows of the vineyard we gave over to this. So great to have for the restaurant.
Okay, so here we come. We're at the beginning of your farm. This is lavender. This is all lavender.
Yeah.
Why lavender?
Well, it was really when we planted it just for because it, we thought it would look nice when you enter the property, but now we've got so much of it that we're actually producing quite a bit of lavender oil, and it gets distilled into lavender oil that's actually the oil that's in the flower, and we make all of our own lavender soap for the agriturismo, and we use a little bit of it in the kitchen as well.
Susan, we're here in a little covered area you have, which is clearly warmer than the other parts we have in the field. There's a lot more growing here. You have some Swiss chard I'm looking at. I'm looking at some onions and garlic, and there's fava beans here. I just saw one of your, I think it was Manon, one of the people who works for you, dash away with some fennel tops, which I'm very excited about because since we're the only ones here, I'm fairly certain that I'll be eating some fennel tops in a little while. This is kind of helping you sustain you through the colder months of the year where...
Yes, that's right. It's a sierra, and it's just basically a plastic tunnel that we put up in the late fall, and we grow brassicas and hardy plants in here all winter, and then in December, January, we plant our garlic and our spring onions and our peas and our fava beans, and so they get a bit of a head start. If you drive down from our house to the Valdarno, yeah, lots of people have these, yeah.
You know, and the other thing that strikes me is while this is rather large, and you are running a restaurant and an inn, it's basically plastic over a metal framing. If I wanted to do this in my backyard, I could grow stuff in Jersey in my backyard all year round.
Because, you know, we here, if you look at the map, our altitude, we are north of Toronto here. Elliot Coleman has that great book, The Four Seasons Harvest, and he talks about how this is the kind of thing that is a very European concept, but you can do this in North America very easily because most people in North America live further south. We're further south.
So if I wanted to, I could put one of these in my backyard, and then when the summer warmed up, just take this plastic sheeting off and I'm outside.
Exactly.
Yeah, greenhouse in New Jersey. I don't know what I was thinking on the farm. I got all giddy with, but it was an amazing, you know, that she's sustainable all year round is just amazing.
She talks about in that last segment. She talks about that lavender field and how they just wanted it to be a pretty place for you to come up. It is.
Oh my God.
75 yards by 50 yard field of purple that just the aroma of lavender, you walk in, you want to get a massage the second, I mean, that's what it feels like. You walk in and you're immediately soothed by the beautiful purple visual and the sweet smell of lavender as you walk into this farm. And the place is very thoughtful that way. And I know I've used that word a couple of times in this interview. It's very, very thoughtful. It's thoughtful of people living there. It's thoughtful of the nature around them. And it's thoughtful of the people who are coming to visit.
Go to restaurantguysradio.com and link on this show if you've downloaded the podcast. And we will put some pictures up on the links section of a picture of the two of us at the gate of La Patria where you see the field of lavender climb the hill behind us. And we'll also link some of the restaurant, which was phenomenal, and some of the accommodations. I cannot recommend highly enough, if you care about what we care about, where your food comes from, going to this place and going to see this place. So let's go back and listen to more of the interview. There's more to come. I'm completely in love with this place. More from Rodin Chianti at La Patria.
We're standing in front of our chicken, one of our chicken areas here, chicken runs. This is the first chicken run that we built, and it's where our chickens for eggs are. And we've got two different heirloom breeds in there. The white ones are the Polo Valdarnese, and they're a breed that is very local to the Valdarno area. And then the black guys, those handsome black chickens, are the Gallo Nero that you see on the Chianti Classico bottle. And it took us a couple of years even to find a couple. They're very rare, almost extinct, but they are bringing them back.
There's a producer in California, a guy named Robert Bialy, who's Italian, and his grandparents emigrated over, began the property, and they also ran a grocery store in California. During Prohibition, it was illegal to make wine, but of course they did anyway. And when you called their grocery store, you would order whatever you ordered, and you'd also order a black chicken. And, of course, they didn't have any black chickens. But if you ordered a black chicken, that meant that you wanted some wine, and they sent you a bottle of wine.
Well, unfortunately, these chickens don't produce wine for us.
Susan, there is a great story in the book that you need to share with our listeners about some turkeys you brought onto the property and a mother turkey who kind of took over some of the chicken rearing for you.
She used to live in here, that turkey. She was great. We had her for a couple of years. And these turkeys were very good at brooding. A lot of chickens today have lost their instinct to brood on a nest because now we're just producing them in an industrial fashion. So the turkey would brood on the chicken's eggs. And we would put the chicken's eggs under the turkey whenever she went broody, and then she would hatch them. But the turkeys are a little bit wild, and they like to fly up into the trees at night to roost instead of going into the hen house. So you'd see her up there in those trees at night, and she'd have all, like, 10 or 12 little chicks tucked under her wings and everything. And then after the chicks grew up, she'd go broody again. And that you'd see the chickens up in the trees at night. She taught them how to be a turkey, basically. She got eaten. We lost her when a faena got into our chicken coop and ate her. Faena, in inglese, non lo so come si chiama. A weasel.
Susan, you mentioned something that I think a lot of people neglect to do. Sometimes it's great to let your plants go to flower and actually use those flowers in the things that you're making. The flower can have a different flavor than the rest of the vegetable, and you know, be delicate. You know, depending on the plant, be delicate or even slightly more intense. Very interesting way to use the whole plant.
Yeah, it is. Especially at this time of the year here, when there's not a lot to choose from, and we don't, you know, everything we serve here in the restaurant comes from the property, so I'm always looking for different, you know, in that plant, for instance, right now I'm getting three different products, the broccoli sprout and the flower and the leaf, so. Right, these patches, which right here, for instance, which is instead of leaving these with nothing for a year, Marco has started to plant a biodynamic forage mix, which is good for the soil. Instead of just leaving it empty, we plant this biodynamic forage mix, which is just starting to come up here. And that produces an awful lot. It produces borage, and Marco can tell you more about what it produces, but malva, tons of beautiful flowers and leaves that we use for our plating and our salads. But it's also good for the soil.
So, Marco, looking at this beautiful and diverse and very old-fashioned looking farm, and I've been on a lot of farms in a lot of countries, what is the most difficult thing about running the agronomy in an old-fashioned farm like this?
Le difficoltà sono alla petraia, per me personalmente, l'ambiente, perché
one of the biggest challenges here for Marco is our altitude and the difference in climate in here. You know, it's just taken us a while to figure out the differences in the hours of sunlight and the different weather. We get even 2 kilometers down the mountain, down this road here. The guy that lives at the end of our road has got a whole different thing going on his farm, and so that's the thing that's the big challenge in just getting to know the property and understand it.
I would like to point out that the use of the word road is an exaggeration. And I think a horse would be as easy to use to get up this road.
It's a challenge here too, I'll just add, because La Petraia in Italian means place of stone. And you would not believe the stones that come out of this soil every year. It's amazing.
So I think a lot of Americans don't understand that it might be bad for the soil, it might be bad for the land, it might be bad for the product that comes out of the land to grow the same thing every year on the same spot.
Avere la stessa cultura sullo stesso suolo per più anni provoca quello che tecnicamente si chiama la stanchezza del suolo.
In intensive agriculture, when you plant the same thing year after year after year, the plant eats the same, takes the same thing from the soil and puts the same thing back into the soil. Farmers who are farming that way have to add chemical fertilizers in order to give the soil the nutrients that it needs. And what we're doing here with the system of rotation is to give the soil all of those things naturally, to enrich it naturally without using any chemicals at all.
So the next plant takes different things out of the soil and puts different things back, and so you...
Exactly, yeah.
Una cosa importante nella costruzione della petraia anche di questo progetto è quello
so
che insieme al dottor Bordini...
We were talking about doing this rotation in the gardens. Of course, you can't rotate in the vineyards, but what we did do in the vineyards in conjunction with our consulting agronomer, Dr. Bordini, was... We planted the vineyards without removing any of the topsoil that had accumulated here for 50 years because nothing had been planted in these fields for 50 years. And that is never done here in Chianti. They bulldoze the topsoil. And Marco is saying that if you walk around this property, you see earthworms everywhere. And, you know, that's a very good sign. You would never see earthworms on an intensively farmed vineyard or farm.
It reminds me, and I know Mark is nodding in assent, because it reminds me of a show we did actually with friends of ours, Barbara Shin and David Page, own Shin Vineyards out on Long Island, and they sort of revolutionized how grape farming is done, how viticulture is done out there. They also left the topsoil in place, and they basically say, my field is a meadow. And it's a whole organic meadow, and it happens to have grapes that grow down the middle. And I'm looking at your field, and it's the same. It's a meadow.
Yeah, I know. And it's funny, you know, when people who don't understand this kind of agriculture drive through Chianti, and they see these perfectly tended vineyards. They're perfectly tended because they're spraying herbicide between the...
I just want to point out that a Twinkie is always perfectly the same as well, and a cake is sometimes slightly different if it's really good.
That's right. And then, you know, they come here and they say, why is your vineyard full of weeds?
And that, my friends, is the last bit of interview we have from Rod and Chianti.
We just had a lovely, lovely time there, and it was such a relaxing place to be, but at the same time, had the intensity of a working farm.
An exhilarating place to be because they're reinventing farming. You can't think of farming, especially when done like this, as boring. It's exciting and it's thoughtful and it's just incredible.
And everybody needs to understand that this is a four-room agriturismo.
Yeah.
There are four bedrooms here and that's it. Okay. Susan's got 12 seats in her dining room at a maximum, so she feeds 12 people at a time. And exceptionally, she is an exceptional, exceptional chef. And that's the part I think that I missed most in having interviewed her, because she kind of downplayed her...
Like homey, traditional...
Right, exactly. Her abilities.
Her Michelin two-star restaurant is...
Exactly.
It's
probably a Michelin two-star restaurant.
I mean, it's not rated by Michelin,
right.
But I give it two Michelin stars.
And for this to be... In this beautiful setting where there can be no more than 8 or 9 people staying at once and only 12 people can eat in the restaurant at any one time, it's unreal. I mean, in this country, you could never afford to do such a thing.
And it's relatively inexpensive. It's a couple of $100 a night, right?
It was 200 euro or so an evening, and that included breakfast and either lunch or dinner.
It's insane.
Two people.
It's insane.
For two people, right.
No, but when you drive up on the road, though, you know, we talked about it a little. You cannot have like a little mini subcompact car. You'll never get up the road. You need a decent car to get up the road.
She is off the main drag in Chianti Classico, and off the off drag in Chianti Classico.
It's no drag at all.
Like 2 kilometers down a gravel road that goes up and down and down and up, and sometimes you can get there and sometimes you can't.
And, you know, there's also a lot to do around that area. There is the butcher shop where Mario Batali went when he was in Italy.
Right, Dario Ciccini's.
It's great stuff. Anyway, we just had to share with you this wonderful place, and this woman is doing really important work. In a really important place. And if you want to go be a part of it, that's great. If not, you know, pick up her book, and there are lessons to be learned, and just how exciting. So I hope that you've enjoyed this hour listening to us both here and abroad. I know that we certainly have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.